The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Gil Alexander with you on this Friday. And Elliot Bowman in the producer's chair this morning. Parlay will be back next week. Well, I'm on vacation next week. So Parlay will be in my chair Tuesday through Friday. I'm not sure who's here in this chair Monday. But in for the vacationing Jeff Parlay. Ben Wilson did Monday through Thursday. Elliot, thanks for being here. You good? We don't have his mic on, but okay. He's good. All right, here's the deal, guys, today on the show. James Salinas will join us on the show later. James Salinas, who's a VSiN host. You may know him from having won a super contest back in the day as well. James, perhaps more recently famous for trying to make a bet during the NFL draft over at Barstool in Colorado and getting not only rebuffed in terms of the amount, but then having the odds changed on him. Hundreds of thousands of people watch that video. We'll have James retell that. And today, we find out the response from gaming as we move this story forward. And you will not want to miss it. Trust me on that. Vinny Maiolio joins us as well. Vinny Maiolio from behind the desk here at the South Point Hotel Casino. We'll move Vinny up a little bit to accommodate James. Jason Weingarten as well from Under a Cloud of Smoke in Southern California. Find out all the stuff he's betting. And Drew Dinsick, an emergency Drew Dinsick appearance because of game one of the NBA Finals last night. The Celtics 120, the Warriors 108. That escalated quickly. Reeves almost killed the guy. I mean, that was something else last night, which we'll get into the details momentarily. First, let me give the tennis play of the day. Get this out of the way. Marin Cilic is the one play today at the semifinals of the French Open and Roland Garros. Marin Cilic, who I got at plus 193 yesterday, gave it out on primetime action. It's not quite that good now. It's plus 174. It's still playable. I wouldn't let it get past plus 165, quite frankly. Actually, I kind of would. I wouldn't let it get past plus 160. He is, listen, just like yesterday, and here, the main thing I want to point out from a betting standpoint, our Martina Trevisan pick turned out to be awful yesterday. Her level of play dropped off a cliff from previous rounds to yesterday against Coco Gauff. Not only could she not win a service game, she barely could win a service point. That was just odd entirely. But it's still been a very solid tournament. If Iga wins tomorrow, which we expect she will, it'll be a spectacular, pardon me, a spectacular tournament. So only one match take off the scent there. But Marin Cilic today, plus 193 against Casper Ruud. Ruud's 12-month clay numbers are better than Cilic's, but everything else in terms of 6-month, 3-month, shorter, Marin Cilic, who won a U.S. Open in 2014, he has been spectacular. And at plus, currently even at plus 174, I got plus 193 yesterday, a spectacular bet to make today in the quarterfinals. Rafa Nadal and Sasha Zverev going at it right now in the other men's semi. So Marin Cilic, your tennis play of the day. As far as the game last night, oh my goodness, 120 to 108. The Celtics take a 1-0 lead in their best of seven NBA Finals series, of course, with the Golden State Warriors. Boston becomes the first team in NBA Finals history to win by double digits after entering the fourth quarter trailing by double digits. First time ever. That per ESPN stats and information. Steph had 21 in the first quarter. Steph Curry had 21 points in the first quarter. I made a bet because a buddy of mine from D.C. said, hey, should we bet Klay Thompson to win MVP? He had heard my thoughts on it. I was like, you want in? Sure. So we went ahead and did it because it was an 18-1 at MGM yesterday on Klay Thompson to win MVP. That MVP ticket lasted a quarter. That's the first thing. It's done. Because Steph had 21 in the first on his way to 34. But here's the thing. Despite Steph Curry having 21 in the first quarter, the Warriors only led by four. And Matt Brown on Primetime Action, my co-host, said immediately, he goes, shouldn't you be pumped if you're a Celtics fan right now? And the answer is a resounding yes, you should be. That was a portent of things to come. Celtics outscored then in the third quarter, 38-24, as the Warriors did their third quarter thing, which is to say, crush people. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the third quarter combined to shoot 2-for-10 from the field. And you're like, all right, Warriors going to do this. In fact, with less than 2 minutes left in the third quarter. The Warriors led by 15, 87-72. You're like, Katie, bar the door. Go Dubs. It's going to be great. Nope. Then the fourth quarter happened. And the Boston Celtics outscored the Golden State Warriors by 24 in the fourth quarter yesterday, tied for the largest point difference in any quarter in NBA Finals history, and the largest fourth quarter point differential in a Finals game all time. So tied for the biggest point differential in any quarter in NBA Finals history, but the fourth quarter record for point differential. 24 as they outscore the Warriors 40-16 in the final frame. 40-16, which included a 17-0 run against the Dubs on their home court. The Celtics in the fourth quarter were 15 of 22 from the field, 9 of 12 from behind the arc. That's just, oh my God. Did the Warriors not play defense in the fourth? Like, what happened there? Drew will give his thought on it. Drew, remember, next segment, Drew was all about betting the Celtics in five at 9-1 odds. And I snickered to myself. It's looking pretty good right now. Again, Celtics, 15 of 22 in the fourth, 9 of 12 from behind the arc. Golden State, on the other hand, shot only 7 of 17 from the field in the fourth quarter. Celtics stopped turning the ball over in the fourth as well. They put up an absurd 12-1 assist-to-turnover ratio in the fourth. Yeah, that'll get it done, too. Warriors were 3.5-point pre-flop favorites. Celtics not only cover that, but get it done on the money line as well. Al Horford, 26, 9 of 12 from the field, 6 of 8 from behind the arc. Those six, by the way, a career high for Horford, including all four in the fourth quarter that he put up. Nothing but splash on all of them. Jaylen Brown, 24, 7 and 5. Derek White off the bench, 21, 6 of 11 from the field, 5 of 8 from behind the arc. And here's probably, you know, in addition to the Warriors only being up by 4 after Steph dropped 21 in the first quarter. Listen, I'm a Warriors guy who has a Warriors futures ticket. But even I have to say the big headline from this game is the Celtics did all that with the reigning defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart, on the bench for most of the fourth quarter. When they were doing their thing, the Celtics, when they were doing all their damage, Marcus Smart was on the bench for most of it. And beyond that, their single greatest player that most would concede, Jason Tatum, struggled throughout the entire game. He was 3 for 17 from the field, still finished with 13 assists, though, to just 2 turnovers, and he was plus 27, plus minus, it should be pointed out. So think about that. 3 of 17 from the field, plus 27. Without scoring a single point. Missing all three shots he took at the quarter. By the way, that plus 27 was in the fourth quarter. Let me rephrase that. He was plus 27 in the fourth quarter. That might be the single most amazing stat of any of this. Jason Tatum was plus 27 in the fourth quarter. 3 for 17 from the field for the game. And then it was pointed out in an article, this is not my original thought, but it was pointed out, this, it's kind of was like a microcosm of the entire Celtics season, where they were under 500 in late January. Remember, they're the first team since the 1981 Houston Rockets to get to the NBA Finals while being under 500 at the halfway point of the season. Well, last night, it's kind of that in one game. Celtics were under 500 late January, then went the final 35 games of the regular season just tearing through. I believe they were 26-6, pardon me, down the stretch, last 32, if I'm not mistaken. 26-6. And during that stretch, posted the best offensive and defensive ratings in the league. And now they're the first team to beat the Warriors at Shea Center in a playoff game. And let's look at the adjusted series prices. Let's put those up on the board. The Celtics swing from a dog, obviously, before game one, having won this game now and resting home court away from the Warriors. Not that home court has been a huge thing at the TD Garden, but the Celtics are now minus 175 in this series, having taken home court advantage away. Game two, by the way, not till Sunday. Game three, not till Wednesday. Oh, God. Back in Boston. Celtics minus 175. Warriors plus 150 on the comeback. And the total games market shifts to 4 at 6-1. 5 games plus 380. Six is the short shot at plus 165, full seven games plus 180. And the correct score is right underneath there as well. Well, the Warriors sweep can't happen, so take that off the board. But that's the adjusted price now on the Celtics. Minus 175, Warriors plus 150. We'll get a sense from Drew about that. And then there's the NBA MVP market after one game. Like I said earlier, my Klay Thompson MVP ticket, because of Steph's first quarter, poof, done. Dead on arrival. DOA. That one lasted shorter than my Tua Tagovailoa Heisman ticket. Worst bet of the year 2021. This might be, in terms of time that it lasted viable, the worst bet ever also. But now Jason Tatum is the short shot, plus 140. Steph remains the short shot beyond that for the Warriors, and that makes sense because he had 34 in the end, plus 180. So if the Warriors came back and won this series, that makes sense. And Jaylen Brown, who really had comparable stats to Jason Tatum in the Eastern Conference Finals, after his fine performance yesterday, he's 5-1. Everybody else is 16-1 or beyond, but it should be noted Al Horford was like 90-1, I believe, before the series. Smart and Horford, both 16-1, and all the other Warriors are 25-1 and beyond. I'm not so sure they should be that short. Draymond is 40-1? Yeah, right. Right. Drew Dinsick joins us next. He was all over the Celtics before this series, and I doubted him so. I won't be here next week, so let's have him take a little premature, albeit, but a little bow for at least what happened last night. Get his thoughts on the series moving forward. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander, still to come on the show. James Salinas on his situation there in Colorado with Barstool. Vinny Maliulo and Jason Weingarten. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a rare Friday appearance, a brief one, albeit, here on the show. An emergency Dinsick segment. Drew from the NBC Sports Bet the Edge and Deep Dive podcast, of course. The former with Sarah Perlman, the latter with his buddy Andy Molitor. Drew, you came on this show before the series. You're like, I got the Celtics in five, man. That sure didn't do anything to dissuade you last night, did it?
Oh, I thought we were talking about Iga Coco Gauff final, no?
Hey, since you bring it up, before we get into this, do you have anything today? Did you bet Chilich or anything later?
I bet Zverev first set money line, and seeing it go down, you know, the mental problems with this kid, the choke fest. That ensued as he was up a break and just cruising on serve, and then just like utterly collapsed. And honestly, the Zverev histrionics, you could set your watch by it. Like,
you really,
you know, big
can.
Match,
yes.
Big match, high leverage moment. And he's like throwing his racket around out there cause he's so lost. And it's tough to watch. I'm still hopeful he could pull it out in a tie break here. But boy, oh boy, Rafa Nadal, is he 50%? Of the player we saw against Djokovic? Yeah. I mean, it looks like he's seeing if he can win this match without really firing many bullets, which is a good tactic because it looks like Zverev is interested in losing this match. So,
he'd be open to it, is what you're saying. Yeah,
I think so. And, you know, when we're on the same page, I think Chilich beats Ruud. I think Ruud's overrated in general, and Chilich is playing at a superb level right now. Like, I went back through history and kind of looked at some of Chilich's losses at Roland Garros, and I kind of feel like an idiot not kind of giving him more credit for his clay, you know, for his slam and his clay pedigree. Like, his losses here have been to like Wawrinka and Andy Murray and Djokovic and Del Potro. Like, he's not losing to, the guys that are kind of fringe top 10 players. He's losing to the all time greats in general here. So
I don't think you're alone in missing that. Every time here as the tournament went on, I would look at his numbers, and I remember the first time just being like, wait, what? Let me look back at that. I was like, how did that happen? How did I miss that? It really awesome Clay numbers. By the way, you're going to a first set tiebreaker, I think. So you got a shot at this here.
It's going to be a sweat though, because the double faults creep in at the absolute least opportune moments every freaking time with this guy. Anyway,
the beauty is that we'll probably know the result by the end of this segment, so we'll be able to see you react live on air. And last thing for those, because there's every once in a while, there's a couple of people who are like, hey, should I hedge on anything with ego? If full nervousness was 10 and not nervous at all was 0, what's your nerve level with ego tomorrow?
About a 2.
Me too.
One. I mean, realistically, Coco Gauff, very deserving. Very deserving Roland Garros finalist. Her clay game, excellent. Her path was soft, I'll admit that. But she got here without dropping a set. She's done very well this fortnight. She's going to the doubles final as well. I'm not sure if you saw that this morning, but
which is a throwback, Krejcikova, right?
Yeah.
McEnroe used to do that all the time, and it's funny like the new school's like, oh, so should she be playing a doubles match for? Hey, man, they used to do it all the time like that.
Yeah, Krejcikova did it last year. Mm-hmm. Coco Gauff not going to do it this year in terms of winning both, I don't think. I think she should make a match of it. I'm looking at over 19 games as potentially an angle to bet there. But ultimately, I think Iga gets this done in straights. There is a world where the same quality of tennis we saw from Coco yesterday against Trevisan, which I thought Trevisan lost that match more than Coco won.
I did, frankly, too. Yeah.
And
it's very odd performance.
Yeah, the first three quarters of the match was Trevisan losing it, and then Coco kind of was like, oh, okay, well, cruise control now. I can play a little more aggressively, and she put it away comfortably. But if the first set Coco shows up against Iga, she's losing 6-1, 6-1. So there's a very clear range of outcomes where, Iga wins comfortably. But I'm expecting a match there. I think it's going to be something like 7-5, 6-3-ish. Iga in straights and probably wins by 5 games.
I like it. I have no doubt that you will be correct. Okay, so what's a more valid takeaway? Celtics fans after the win and Celtics backers saying, hey, look, Steph had 21 in the first. We only trailed by 4. Jason Tatum went 3-for-17. We won. Marcus Smart wasn't even on the court in the fourth. For most of it, we won. Or the Warriors on the other side saying, hey, we were up 15 with less than 2 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, sometimes a team catches fire. That's going to happen. What's the more valid takeaway from that game?
I don't think either are giving you much insight into the future head-to-heads between these two teams, but the latter is problematic for the Warriors, I think. If the Warriors are patting themselves in the back for having a solid lead going into the fourth quarter and then doing what they did in the fourth quarter and poo-pooing that, that's a problem.
Draymond was. That's why I bring it up.
I mean, honestly, his quotes after the game made me be like, oh, so Celtics in 4. I mean, it was like
that's
like,
how you're going to lose your Celtics in 5 bet. They're going to win it.
Exactly. I mean, if the Warriors don't go back to the lab and come up with some very, very, very key adjustments, they are in deep trouble in this series. And, the idea that the Celtics had a lucky string of shots in that fourth quarter is banana land. They were wide open on at least 9 of those. They were like, they had 6 feet of without separation. And guess what? The Celtics can shoot. I'm not sure if anyone knew that, but yes, the Celtics have very good shooters. If you give them wide open looks, they are going to bury those shots. And then the opposite was true. In the fourth quarter, the Warriors could not get an open look to save their lives. The Celtics basically were like, Draymond Green, please shoot. We will give you 12 feet of separation. Like, take whatever shot you want on this court from behind the three-point line. We dare you. And he would not do it. Similarly, there was a hesitancy from, a number of the other kind of role players of creating offense. And then they had 4 players covering Steph, around the rim or at the three-point line. There was a beautifully screened play by Draymond Green where he just wiped Jaylen Brown, off the face of the court. And, so you would think, oh, wow, perfect. Steph's going to have a wide open look from 3 here. And then there's 2 other Celtics in his face with a hand, hands up, ready to, block a 3-point attempt. So he had to pass out of it and they couldn't generate any other offense. And so, if that's, you know, what crunch time is going to look like, the Warriors have a serious problem on their hands.
I wish I could disagree with any of that, Drew, as a Warriors ticket holder. I can't. In one, you know, it's funny, as you seized on one play, I want to seize on a comparison, too. Remember in the Denver series, there was that sequence, I can't remember which game it was, but, like, Jokic was repeatedly one-on-one with Curry, and Curry just toyed with him, right?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to go past you? Am I going to drop back and shoot? Want to step back and shoot? And it was hilarious. Right,
yeah.
With Robert Williams, it wasn't quite that simple, was it?
No,
wasn't quite that simple.
No, when Robert Williams is on the floor, they can switch 1 through 5. That is very powerful. When Robert Williams is off the floor, they have an unbelievable set of dynamic playmakers on offense. And so you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It really. And the Warriors need to. I don't even really like the Warriors. I haven't really had a great grasp on exactly what their adjustments look like over the balance of this season. They just seem to just like come out of halftime and flip the switch.
Yes.
And Curry plays a little harder and like the, you know, the defense hustles a little harder, and that's not going to cut it. Like they need an actual tactical adjustment. They need to shake up the lineup a little bit. Jordan Poole really was pretty uninspiring, unimpressive in game one. A lot made of the experience imbalance, but like the only player who looked like he really didn't belong in like a finals moment was Jordan Poole, I thought. And the Celtics getting what they got from Derek White, unsustainable. Those were the lucky shots. Derek White's not going to continue to make those just complete, kind of contested, deep threes. But that may not matter. You know, they may not need it. If Tatum heats up offensively, if Jaylen Brown continues to perform at that level, particularly as a facilitator, then, you know, the Celtics are going to continue to find their offense in this game. I would expect game two is more competitive, but I think still, if you're getting 4+4 with the Celtics, then, I guess the question is, is this an opportunity to, you know, we're not going to see a close game maybe, or if we see a close game, it's a Celtics win, and so you're better off taking the money line, because, you know, realistically, there are probably a lot of outcomes here where the Warriors come up with the key adjustment. They have a tactical advantage for the balance of this for the balance of the second game, and they tie it up 1-1, or the Celtics come out and do it again and win a close one. I think a Celtics close loss is probably the least likely outcome here, but I think I'm going to go back to the well with Celtics money line.
Can't blame you. Warriors do have that championship DNA. We'll see what they've got in them. Game two, for those of us who bet them, we're hoping that kicks in, that's for sure. Drew, can't thank you enough, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the tennis.
Oh, you bet. Hopefully Zverev doesn't find a way to choke this.
Sure did sink, everybody. At @whale_capper on a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Jason Weingarten next.
A numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN Summer Special is here. For only $39, you get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Next few months going to be filled with the best betting content in the business right here at VSiN.com, and subscribers will have access to all of it, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets. Jonathan Von Tobel will have best bets all the way through the NBA Finals. Andy McNeil's going to break down all the action on the ice, has been. He's got all his best bets all the way through the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we'll have lots of NFL preseason coverage as well, not to mention continued best bets and premium articles covering golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience, which features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it, the cost is only $39 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. Drew Dinsick's worst fears may be coming home to roost. We shall see. Four set points on the racket of Sasha Zverev. He has squandered the first three of them. My goodness. We'll see if Rafa can get it to 6-6 here in the tiebreaker. It's Gil Alexander from Under a Cloud of Smoke, ladies and gentlemen, in Southern California, the host of the Wide World of Weingarten podcast. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter. Always fascinating. Follow @Spreadopedia. It's Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. How's it going?
I'm doing well. You bet any tennis at all, or are you steer clear?
A little tiny bit every now and then. You know, sometimes I'll jump in live, but day to day, no, I don't make money betting tennis.
I noticed that yesterday you put out a tweet that was a seismic kind of shifting tweet. You actually bet a no that a run would not be scored in a first inning of a game, your first time this season. Could you explain to people why that gives you the willies?
yeah, I'm disgusted with myself. If, if tell you the truth, not gonna lie, I was just going through the prices, and the first Yankees the Yankees Angels game yesterday, Cortez Ohtani, I got no -110, which is a pretty good price. I mean, Chris was dealing like -140, Pinnacle was dealing like -122 or something. So I was like, all right, I'll take the -110 because it's a price thing for me. All I care about is the price. I don't care if it's a yes or no. I care them getting the best price. So I went out, got the best price. Then I saw all these no-score first inning touts were touting Angels, Yankees no-score at like -125 or even worse prices. And I was like, okay, I know I'm already sunk before this game even started. And Ohtani gave up two first inning home runs, I think. So,
yeah,
you know, sometimes you lose, but I I could say I took the best number, but really I just I strayed from
my
winning ways.
A moment of weakness.
I went down to their level, as we would say, and boy was I disappointed with myself. I mean,
yeah,
God, it was ugly down there.
How you feeling about Shohei right now, by the way?
You know, I mean, obviously I could see what everybody else sees, and going into Yankee Stadium and giving up four home runs and not doing much of anything, obviously doesn't push him forward in any of the markets, but still a long season. I'm not going to worry too much about one start, but it was disappointing. Obviously, you know, it was a big, big opportunity for him to make a statement, and he did not.
And he did not. That is for sure. You did a piece at Point Spread Weekly, and you went through MVPs, current MVP numbers, not the blind resume stuff that we necessarily did yesterday or 2 days ago, but you went through a whole bunch of candidates in both the MVP races and both the Cy Young races. Give me a highlight or two from all of them. Let's start with AL MVP. Where might you think value lies there?
Rafael Devers is playing just as well as Aaron Judge, if not slightly better. I think there's some good numbers on him. Unfortunately, he's probably not going to be on a playoff team, which will hurt him. Aaron Judge is going to get that pinstripe premium that we talked about. So, you know, it's an interesting market in the AL, but I really think it's Ohtani versus everyone still. NL, Mookie Betts has kind of become the new favorite. That could change, but his numbers were really, really strong. Paul Goldschmidt would be the guy I would look at if I was still shopping for off-market numbers. I think if you can get 10-1 on Paul Goldschmidt, he's playing well, much better than that number.
Hit streak doesn't hurt, that's for sure. I like I like a good hit streak. But I am happy I grabbed some Mookie, that's for sure, this past weekend. I know it's not the best number in the world, but I'm just happy I have him in pocket at +450, I believe it was. Then Cy Young's. Where do you think you uncovered maybe a little something? And have we gotten to the point, we brought this up a couple times, both on primetime and on a numbers game earlier this week. Have we gotten to the point where Gerrit Cole might be, I brought it up with you, right? We did it with the blind resume. Have we gotten to the point where Gerrit Cole is the underrated guy now?
Kinda, but his main problem at the moment is Nestor Cortez is pitching so well, and even like Jameson Taillon's pitching so well, that when you have teammates that are, you know, contending for the Cy Young with you, you oftentimes end up splitting votes. And at this point, like, I couldn't do after yesterday that Nestor Cortez doesn't deserve a Cy Young vote ahead of Gerrit Cole, because, you know, I mean, what has he done wrong?
Nothing.
But then you look at the entire AL pool at the moment. You got guys like Martin Perez, Tarik Skubal. There are so many guys alive. I counted like 12 guys that are alive in the AL that we could talk about. So it's a very deep market.
How is Martin Perez still a thing?
Well, he was always a number one prospect. I mean, he was number one pitching prospect when Mike Trout and Manny Machado were coming up.
No, just, I remember.
Sometimes arms don't develop at the same rate. Some guy, you know, Rich Hill didn't become a major league pitcher till he was like 35.
Yeah. I'm just saying, how many times did I bet on Martin Perez in the past? And and felt the brunt of that. But it is so true, right? Like, and for all these prospects we talk about who then disappear into the, you know, into the ether, we never talk about them again. Then there's the ones that just develop at their own pace. We're so impatient, right, as bettors and as sports fans. But that's just the nature of baseball sometimes. By the way, Cortez, 1.50 ERA. Expected ERA, 2.18. FIP, 2.49. I mean, he has been fortunate on the BABIP, though, right? 239. That's where, and you know, and the strand rate is 88.6%. So there are some indicators. By the way, the home run to fly ball rate is 6.6%. That's why the XFIP jumps up. Still not terrible, right? Still 3.06. But there is, as great as he's been, there is some indication that he will regress, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't argue that, you know, if you're doing the if the vote was held today sort of thing, he would probably be a serious contender, but It's not being held today.
What about NL Cy Young?
Such a deep field as well. I mean, obviously the guys at the top, you got Corbin Burns, Alcantara, Joe Musgrove, Pablo Lopez, those guys all deserve their front runner status at the moment. A little farther down, Zach Wheeler, I think, had the best May of anybody. He should probably be bumped up a little bit. And then if you're looking for the obligatory Dodgers pitcher that deserves to be in the rankings, I would actually go with Tony Gonsolin.
Yeah. Tony.
Yeah, if you have Betfred, there's a 80-1 stray out there. He's down to about 40-50. He's had four straight starts, I think six innings. Either zero, maximum two earned runs in any of those starts. He's been pretty elite. He throws almost as hard. I think he averages like 98 miles an hour or something on his fastball. He's got some very good advanced metrics.
Gonsolin is almost similar with the advanced metrics to Cortez, though. Like, so it's 1.59 ERA, expected ERA, 2.49. The FIP is 3.05. The XFIP is 3.50 because 200 BABIP, 6.8% home run to fly ball rate, 86.1% strand rate. So there are a couple guys where you're just like, I don't know.
I don't know if you can keep it up.
Yeah, but interesting nonetheless. But yeah, you do wonder if the Cortezes, if you will, and the Gonsolins of the world will regress. By the way, Betfred, I wish there was a Betfred here in Las Vegas. The truth is there is one. It's at the Virgin Hotel, but they are unlicensed. So there is literally a Betfred sports book that exists inside the Virgin Hotel. The only issue with that, Jason, is you can't actually make a wager. How about that?
Very weird.
It's very exciting.
Gonsolin's leading the NL and ERA at the moment, by the way.
Yeah, Gonsolin is leading the NL and ERA, 1.59, right. And Cortez is 1.50, is it, in the AL, did I just say? So, I mean,
yeah,
these guys are, you know, the baseball card stats are unbelievable. Before we go to break, what is the one bet you've made in anything prior to the season starting, pre-flop, that you feel the best about?
I don't know, Julio Rodriguez, Rookie of the Year.
Julio Rodriguez, Rookie of the Year.
Big numbers there. I mean, I think he had his 15th stolen base of the season yesterday. He's got six home runs. I mean, what else do you need to do? You got past 20 counting stats on June, you know, the first week of June. What else do you want?
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. We'll get Jason's baseball plays of the day, see what he has already bet into the market, and then get his reaction. James Salinas is going to be on the show later to advance this story about his dispute with Barstool over the NFL draft bet that wasn't, for various reasons. We'll recap that story and see where it has gone now with gaming. But we'll get Jason's reaction to Adam Chernoff's piece, Where is the Line? Sports Betting Regulators Need to Act Now to Protect the Player. How interesting that piece comes out. And now we have something to advance the James Salinas story with. Coming back, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM is pitching baseball fans a chance to swing for the fences. Register using code VSiN200 and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 moneyline wager on any Major League Baseball game and either team hits a homer, regardless of your bet's outcome. Enjoy baseball like never before with BetMGM all season long. Sign up today with the King of Sportsbooks. Eligibility restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New customer offer. All promotions promotion subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Skill Alexander, Jason Weingarten, kind enough to hang out for a couple segments this morning from under a cloud of smoke in Southern Cali. Jason, we have some breaking news here. Joe Girardi has been fired by the Philadelphia Phillies. Phillies 22-29 on the young season, a full 12 games out of first place in the NL East. By the way, they're in third place. The Mets in first, the Braves in second, the Phillies in the middle of that division, 22-29, and Joe Girardi given the door. How do you feel about that? Not expected, or pretty expected in your from your vantage point?
I mean, just based on how they played this season, how they finished last season, I'm not surprised that somebody had to take the fall. I tend to kind of lean towards replacing managers doesn't change a lot. It might change, you know, some clubhouse stuff or chemistry, whatever. Maybe guys don't like them. But in general, the manager just, you know, makes the moves, the players play. So this is mostly on the players, not Girardi. You know, they gave Girardi a pretty talented set of players to work with, and it's mostly on the players here.
Yeah, he's the one that takes the fall. So Joe Girardi out as the Phillies manager at this point in the season here, just 51 games in, 22-29. By the way, for those watching the tennis match, Sasha Zverev did squander 4 match points, staved off a couple, but then succumbed, because of course he did. And Rafa Nadal takes the first set in a tiebreaker, and the men's semis 10-8. So Rafa on his way, trying to get to a 14th crown at Roland Garros. Obviously a finals match, if he can get through today, still in front of him as well. All right, Jason, before we get to your baseball picks, Adam Chernoff wrote this piece at Covers, and we're going to advance the story a little later with James Salinas. But the name of the piece was, "Where is the line? Sports betting regulators need to act now to protect the player." I'm not sure if you got a chance to read this at all, but essentially, it is extremely timely piece because this stuff just keeps rearing its head. And the James Salinas matter was a bet at Barstool during the NFL draft, where he went up there, he wanted to make a bet. The guy behind the counter was very chesty. "Oh, we'll take anything you want." James tells him exactly what he wants. They reduce the amount of the wager that they'd be willing to take. Okay, fine. But then they change the odds on him. And James is like, "Thank you very much. Give me my money." Now, we'll find out just how bastardized that story got a little later on the show. But Adam goes on to tell even worse, you know, worse stuff that's going on. There was one incident where someone deposited $500 and then got immediately limited to $1.34 on each bet or something like that, where he'd have to make hundreds of bets, right, to get back his original stake. They wouldn't let him pull out the money initially. And they're like, "No, you're gonna have to make enough bets here at that price point to even get your money back," essentially, is what it came down to. So wouldn't even let him pull out the money he just deposited and immediately limited him. There's that. And then there was an incident north of the border in Canada, in Ontario, where betting is now legal, where there was a Canadian Football League game where a team won, players won their bet against the spread. It cashed. They got the money put in their account, and then they were told it was a mistake, and they got their money taken out. Now, those are extreme examples, people would say. But honestly, you and I know people who this stuff happens to all the time. The most common thing is the changing of the odds before you're allowed to make your bet. So your line is a great one, and I'll throw it to you, which is, it's like I'm doing the booking for you.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm used to that at this point. It's gotten me, you know, interested in opportunities and stuff. But I mean, are these all Barstool specific?
No. Just the James one is Barstool. These are all over the place. These run the gamut.
Okay, so I wasn't sure if this was a Barstool Cambi issue or just the way books are operating. I mean, books for the most part, you know, like I always try to tell people, you're the customer. You're not their friend. They don't like you. You know, you're taking money from them. You could be friendly with them, but it's their job is to take your money. This is the enemy, you know? They act like it a lot of the time. They think that being a licensed bookmaker basically gives them an opportunity to steal from their customers and treat their customers like a word I'm probably not allowed to say on live radio.
Okay.
But none of it surprises me. It's very much why most professionals and most, you know, high volume gamblers keep their offshores, is because we like the people we trust. And frankly, half of these people running these new books have zero experience. I mean, an entire generation of operators have grown up without, you know, an ability to learn bookmaking in the United States. So really it just comes down to there not being enough qualified people to run this industry correctly. And you're dealing with a bunch of, you know, rejects and social science majors and people who aren't, like I said, aren't qualified to hold these positions. Most of them probably don't even actually have college degrees, if I think about it. So,
well, you said something in there that I've been beating, which is really the bottom line on this is the tacit agreement, right? The unspoken agreement that is made is that with legalization would come a regulated environment that would ensure fair play. That's the
That's the thing. Regulated doesn't mean fair.
Correct. So that's what I'm getting at. So that's the unspoken belief of it, right? That regulated would mean fair, because their position had always been, oh, the local bookie. Oh, the offshore. Oh, those are the bad guys, right? You can't trust those people at all. I mean, it's an unregulated. They could do whatever they want. Now, are there little points that they have that are valid? Sure. If there's a dispute with offshores, you don't have a certain, you know, procedural thing to go through to perhaps get that thing adjudicated properly in your favor. But what we have, what we're learning, I guess, is the upshot of this piece, and the upshot of what Adam is trying to say, is what we're learning is exactly what you just was chimed in with, is, oh, this ain't fair. And as a matter of fact, it might even be less fair. And so that's the thing, right? That's cutting to the core of this. That's what is so disconcerting. And the very thing that you are espousing to prevent and to get people away from offshore is the very thing you end up doing by this behavior, is pushing people towards it. Isn't that what's really the end of the story here, at least currently?
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is a lot of the operators, your people on the operator side, will basically come back and say, well, they could sacrifice the 5% of us or whatever percent of us that are complaining. They don't care, you know? They just don't care about winning bettors. They would prefer that none of us bet at their books to begin with, because we don't make them money, you know? They want customers who don't win, and they're pretty vocal, and, you know, every once in a while you catch them saying the quiet part loud.
Isn't that the definition, though, of predatory, Jason?
Yes, it is. And I mean, look, let's be honest here. I one day want to be a regulator. I can't think of a better job in the world than getting a government pension for telling people, you know, how to gamble. So
I want to be
a California state gambling regulator one day.
All right.
In the future.
There it is. It's out there in the universe. Let's make it happen. What'd you bet baseball today?
Oh, for baseball today, I bet the Red Sox -155. And I'm trying. Oh, Padres +142. That's all I got. I'm going to the Dodger game tonight, so I got to have some action on that. But nothing there yet.
Red Sox -155. And the Padres +142.
Yeah, Musgrove Burns, good matchup today.
Musgrove Burns at that one at where's that? That's at Milwaukee today. Milwaukee obviously struggling with their starting staff in terms of injuries. So Padres, that's a 8:10 Eastern, 5:10 Pacific start in Milwaukee, and then Red Sox at the Oakland Athletics, 6:40. Pacific 9:40 Eastern, 6:40 Pacific. So Red Sox and Padres, those are the two plays.
Yep, that's all I got today. Surprisingly, long card, not a lot of bets though.
And you can pretty much guarantee no runs will be scored first inning wagers from Jason today. Pretty much a guarantee.
Disgusted with myself for that still. I'll be fading. I'm just going to start blindly fading all the people who write no score columns every day. Maybe I'll keep track of it.
What a strange little cottage industry that has, you know, sprouted up. Fraud
is a very famous industry. So this is nothing new in gambling or life.
It's as old as it gets. Thank you, Jason. Great talking to you, man.
Thanks for having me. Good luck with tennis. I'll talk to you after the show.
Thank you, brother. Coming back with Vinny Maliulo on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.